you guys can clarify if I'm wrong on. My understanding is the reason you guys don't allow vendors in is because it's a taxpayer publicly funded park, and you guys don't want private for-profit commerce in there. I just wanted to throw a couple numbers at you guys, and hopefully, you know, maybe this can be an ongoing discussion, because I'll be tuning in pretty much every month, and so hopefully maybe we can get some groundwork on this. But you guys roughly get about 135,000 visitors a year, most of which are in the summertime between the months of May to September. If we broke those into weekends, that's roughly 32 weekends. With my ice cream truck, on average, with those weekends, I could easily be doing $2,000 to $5,000, and I'd be totally love to give you guys 10% of that to go back into the park to give you guys more funding. With that $2,000 to $5,000 a weekend on the truck at 10%, that roughly comes to $200 to $500 a weekend. And over the course of summertime, you guys would be looking at $6,400 to $16,000, just free money to help better the parks.
Can you hear us, sir?
I can barely hear you.
Yes.
I can hear you now.
Your voice is sort of oscillating between loud and quiet for some reason on the system that's making it very difficult for us to hear. Is there anything that you could possibly do on your side, such as talking directly into the mic closer to it?
Yes, I will try again. My apologies. I actually dropped my phone into the river 2 days ago, so I'm surprised it's still working. So my apologies on that. Basically, I would like to get the ball rolling to get the ice cream truck or other vendors allowed in there, with you guys taking maybe a 10% commission, something that can be negotiated maybe later on. But it would benefit everyone, in my opinion. There are no amenities for food, not even a vending machine. At, for example, Frenchman's, I'm not sure about Klein Line, but the closest thing at Frenchman's is like 5 miles away. A simple ice cream truck, such as my own, or maybe a small food stand, would greatly probably increase the already huge number of people you get every year at the park, as well as a bit more customer satisfaction. And with, you know, taking a 10% commission, you guys could be looking a lot more money towards the park every year. That's basically my tidbit. If you guys have any questions, I know you guys probably have other things you got to get going to, but any questions?
Could I get your name again?
Yeah, my name is Nick Lyon. L-Y-O-N.
Okay, thank you. And you've been talking to Eric?
I talked to him once, probably about several weeks ago, and I spoke to Delaney again at the front office today to clarify when this meeting was. But I was trying to get into the parks with my truck several weeks ago and trying to figure out what I could do in order to make this happen. And basically, to my understanding, is there would have to be a new bylaw or legislation put in that you guys will allow vendors back into the park. So I'm here trying to get that ball rolling.
Okay.
Nick, this is David Steig. I'm in the planning and development section. Our division manager is not in the meeting in person today. I'm trading text messages with him. Have you sent your contact information to Eric Christensen?
No, this is my, well, Eric, possibly. I've talked to him on the phone. I don't know if he wrote it down, but this is basically, I'm at step one here. I wasn't sure where to go or where to start, and he told me that these meetings happen once a month, and so I wanted to make sure that since I talked to him, I at least was able to attend the first one.
Okay. I won't try to collect your email address through this connection, but we should probably connect to discuss this further. There's process associated with it. Big surprise.
Yeah.
So if you can go to the county's website and see if you can find Rocky's email address or my email address. I think if you go to the Parks and Lands website, at the very least, you would get it to, I think it's parks at.
I can type it into the chat. I'll type it into the chat.
Put it in the chat. So.
Okay.
Thank you, Lindy.
Got it in a minute.
And then Rocky or I will reach out to you.
Okay. Perfect. And what was your name again, sir?
David Stipe.
Thank you.
Lindy just put my email in the chat as well.
And how do you spell that last name?
It should be in the chat. It's S as in Sam, T as in Tom, I, P as in Paul, E. No R. No, it's not Stripe, which is what most people do to my last name.
If you,
I'm just on the phone call here. I'm not actually on the Microsoft. I'm getting ready to actually stay in Columbia right now, and so I'm in my truck just tuning in.
Nick, I can call you in a second and give you the email addresses.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, if you guys have it in the minutes, I'll be able to look at it when you guys upload them to the website as well. So that's fine with me.
Okay. We'll track each other down.
Perfect. That sounds great to me. I got names, and that's good enough for me. I can go from there.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good rest of your meeting and a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have any other comments?
Would you bring back vendors to the parks? They once were vendors at the park.
So the way it would work is we'd have to do an RFP, and then it would have to be opened up to anyone who wanted to respond with a complete application in order to do something like that. We can't sole source those sort of opportunities.
But the question is, was there ever vendors?
I don't know.
There was?
Yeah, I believe there were.
Our historian here.
Yeah, I know that there were, especially sports parks, like there was a vendor here, there was one at Hawkinson Park. I don't know the status of that one currently.
Well, we have concession vendors.
Not
a truck vendor.
There were vendors for paddle boards and kayaks at Round Lake at one
point. On the north end of Round Lake.
Yeah, years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We have Rocky?
Yes. Concessionaires have to be part of the Commission for the Blind. So there are state laws that further implicate or challenge opportunities.
Yeah, we have to offer those opportunities to the Commission for the Blind per state rules. And then they can decline that vending opportunity. And then you go out for a larger selection.
Okay. Rocky, you got a report?
Sure. Apologize for if my cell phone's going in and out. Couldn't get the old computer to connect. All right. Well, that's why David's there. So if
it's not
getting any work, just tell me.
Okay, thank you.
But the July went well. We're very busy. We've had interviews for Kevin's team for some project positions, and we're now in the process of the selection process there. We've hired one person in operations. It was a transfer from Road Ops. In the North Parks, and that seems to be going great. We have three other positions that were under recruitment now. We were able to take down two old caretaker trailer houses at Daybreak and at Lucia Falls. There was an article in the paper on those. We are now in process of seeking bids for the RV pad at Daybreak. We received some bids in for the Klein Line shelter replacement, and we're currently reviewing those and trying to get that project completed before the end of the year. We are ramping up with all of our master planning, so you guys were invited, fingers crossed, to the meeting that's, I think, tomorrow for Minnehaha. And so that's going to be the first open house or kickoff with the public for that brand new neighborhood park, as well as we're continuing to move forward on a couple other sites for the property. I'm available for any questions, or David or Kevin, Danielle that are in the room can add anything additional. Thank you.
I would just add a couple things if you're interested. The rock went down on the Klein Line parking lot yesterday. It's all one color instead of a patchwork. On the 10th, they are going to put the final coat of seal on it. It's called Cape Seal, so it's oil, rock, oil. And the striping will happen early in September. So that's good news. The bids for the Daybreak RV pad will only include the concrete. We're working with facilities on how much of the utility connection work they can do. I'm working with Amy to buy some of the equipment that we need to do the utility connections. And we're working on a bid package for 3 more RV pads. They're technically in the 24 draft CIP, but if we can get them bid this fall, we do have some money in the 23 major maintenance budget to get that work done. So I'd like to be ahead of schedule on something. That'd be just amazing. Let's see what else is going on. We're going to do one more.
The rainbow.
Hazard tree. Yeah, we're going to do one more hazard tree project this fall. The rainbow at Phillida is standing in the upright position. It is wrapped like a baby, wrapped in a big wood box. It will stay that way until the cylinder testing is complete tomorrow or Thursday. We want to make sure the concrete, so they test the compressive strength of the concrete. We want to make sure that the concrete footing meets the specification before we unwrap the baby and hopefully finish that up. We're diligently working with the contractor on Cozy Cam. We got an email today from neighbors who were concerned about the weeds. We're working with the contractor to complete the maintenance portion of the contract, which includes making sure that we don't have weeds to deal with, and a big punch list on that project. So hopefully we can put that to bed. We're getting started again on Curtain Creek design. The shelter at Klein Line, we met with the contractor. Lindy and I met with the contractor today to just talk through their bid because we weren't familiar with the contractor. We only received 2 bids. They were drastically different. We want to make sure that we move ahead with a low bidder that can do the work as opposed to getting into a touchy situation. So they're buying their shelter from a company that we've not purchased a shelter from, but we looked at their pavilions. It will match it will come really close to matching the shelter that's out there with the Blue Lamb arch truss. And we're real excited to hopefully get that, if not purchased and installed this year, purchased this year, so we can keep that moving ahead. So other than that, we're just rolling right along.
Nice job getting that up.
The arch?
The arch and getting it about ready to go.
Lindy has done most of the work on the shelter, and it really boiled down to shoreline exemption permits and just, you know, trying to wade our way through the process because we, you know, even though we're the county, we still engage other parts of the county for permitting and process, and we jump through the same hoops that a developer jumps through. So that's always worth noting. So
Lindy must say, Lindy, please.
Oh, hello.
Oh,
hello.
Is that okay? I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. Is there reverb?
Nope.
Okay. Okay, good. I just wanted to say that I really hope that all of you have a chance to come to the Minnehaha open house tomorrow. It's going to be a great opportunity. We have no idea how many folks are going to show up, but we've put out signs in the neighborhood. We've made lots of phone calls and had mailers that have gone out. And so we're actually getting some folks writing in with wanting to volunteer to help pull weeds in the park and just sharing their concerns and interests and overall support of having a park. So it's looking like an exciting opportunity to meet people next or tomorrow. There's also a community survey that's open. If I can share the link now with you, if you'd like, if you have anybody that you'd like to share it with, encourage them to participate in it. We'd really appreciate that. We're going to start a survey, I would expect by the end of the month, for Hazel Dell Community Park. We're having a short survey to start the project, the master plan development off there, specific to the 5 acres that was kind of swapped around at the park and hasn't been developed before. And that will precede the development of the concept plan for that project. And then we'll present that to the public later the fall. So just wanted to share that information.
I have one other thing. Priya is on the call. I don't know if you have met Priya. She is the new deputy director for the Public Works Department. She's just silently sitting there in the background. Now she's in the foreground. Hello, Priya. Priya, did you want to take just a couple of minutes to introduce yourself to the Parks Advisory Board?
Absolutely. Thank you for introducing me. My name is Priya Dhanapal. I'm the new Public Works Deputy Director for Clark County. And the park, one of the divisions that I manage or take care of is the Parks and Lands Department as well. So I'm happy to be here and happy to support the community and the division in the capacity that I can. But looking forward to seeing more of all of you and happy to support Clark County in their community involvement in the Parks Division as well.
Thank you.
Thanks, Priya.
Yes.
Thank you.
So the other person,
That's Kaylee. Have you met Kaylee?
I'm Kaylee.
Kaylee, would you like to introduce yourself to the Parks Advisory Board? Evidently, they have not met you.
Yes.
Sure. My name is Kaylee McLaughlin Burton, and I'm the Communications Manager for Public Works, and I also manage our Community Engagement and Inclusion Team. So that includes Eric Christensen. And Tracy Corhonen, who deals with reservations, park use permits, and just kind of general inquiries to the park's phone number and email box, mostly about reservations, parking fees, things like that. And then I have several other folks on my team that do work for all of the divisions in public works. So nice to meet you all.
And you, thank you. Everybody there. So, Danielle?
Yes. All right. The crux of what we're going to discuss is, I don't know if you had a chance, but we discussed some action items by the Parks Advisory Board last month to get a chance to read the Natural Areas Acquisition Plan and provide some feedback. So I've received a couple of feedback options from you two, and John and Tanya. Tanya, did you get my email this morning?
I did, yeah. So it looks like some of the just minor typos were updated. There were a couple other things that I wanted to get. One item is we have a list of the projects, so I want to get a list that shows also who originally sponsored each of these, where we are at in our objective, and what the key objective of each of those projects are. I want to find out how much we spend also on these.
Okay.
Each of them individually, respectively.
So did you look at the spreadsheet that was attached to all the current projects?
Yes, there's a list of all the current projects, and it shows the parcels and that kind of thing, but it doesn't show all the items that I just listed, okay, as far as I
find. All right, so you're wanting funding sources, you're wanting.
Not a funding source. I want to know who originally sponsored it, what the original objective is, and where we're at in those objectives with regard to each of those respective projects. I also want to know how much we spent on those objectives and what activities are currently taking place on those sites. So that would allow us to have a snapshot of where we're at.
Okay.
Another of the items that I had listed is that in reading through this, most of the guidance speaks towards sponsor agencies and those evaluation criteria. I think we need to clarify how Clark County ourselves actually goes through this process, what we're actually looking at. We need to have some sort of form or very clear criteria that we're evaluating each of these on. And then another item, I believe, I think you said in here that you guys are looking into creating a process if some of these don't meet criteria or for them to
the conversion
be
process.
Transferred conversion
process. Yes.
You said you're already looking into that.
Yes.
So I want to see what's come up with regard to the conversion process.
Okay.
Let's see. Another item is with regard to properties that are within HOAs. And this is something for the committee to think about and discuss, but I think that it should be stipulated that we will not for the properties that are in HOAs, because those properties are encumbered, we're not able to use them. I think it would be a good idea for us to not do that any further.
Right. Anything else?
It's like some of this was just things like page numbers, which you already calculated. I think with regard to the idea of switching the time frame from 3 years down to 2 years, I think that we should look into what we're already doing to think about further whether that's a good idea with regard to where we are in these projects and what due diligence that we're actually putting into them.
So I can speak to that one a little bit. What we've noticed is that projects before me in my position, right, they kind of, they're thought in advance 5 years, 10 years in advance, and then things just fall off. And so we're trying to be a little more nimble in terms of acquisitions in general, because things are just changing so quickly. And so the thought was that if we do a 2-year cycle, that puts the agency or the city on a little bit of a, like, you've got 2 years to execute and we're not going to hold this longer in the queue, and then it just falls apart. So the thought was that we could, you know, speed up the process, and that would give us a year to rank, 2 years for them to execute. Then we do another year of ranking again, if you're doing that two times in the 7-year window, right? And then 2 or 6 years, and then 2 more years to execute. So that would give those cities a faster timeline to execute the acquisition. So that's kind of why we're doing it that way. It was 3 years, and then it was kind of open-ended. And so we're trying to pull that window in a little bit more and make them, you know, execute those projects faster.
I mean, I can see the validity in trying to execute something faster, but at the same time, I think that from what I see in the county, we need to be engaged due diligence versus just trying to push things through quickly. And that's why I want to see things such as monthly guidance for the county when we're prior to acquiring these projects and how we'll evaluate them versus just criteria for a sponsoring agency such as a city or something of that nature.
John, did you have any feedback on or any questions from my feedback you gave you this morning?
I didn't have any follow-up questions. I answered them well.
Okay. Do you have any other recommendations for the guidance panel?
No, I do not have them.
Okay. Have you had a chance to review? No.
Sorry.
Okay.
I waited through most of it.
Good.
And
what's your feedback?
I thought it was pretty well done. I'm sorry. Did not get into the weeds like Tanya did, but thank you. It's all right.
Don.
Yes. Yes. And I read it. Generally free of errors. I thought it was in line with all of our other products. I didn't really have the feedback that others have done. I'm kind of lost for words, embarrassed a little bit that I didn't go through it with a fine tooth comb, like comb the desert. Anything I would have said, they were really minor things, which for the context of the document isn't going to make a difference.
Okay. Please go ahead and email me your, if they're minuscule things that I need to do. I would love to get that feedback, Dawn. So Teresa, you have another month.
Okay.
Your time's not up. You want another month. But yeah, please give me your feedback.
Okay.
I love it. So let's.
Daniel, just real quick. Yeah. I think what we've noticed is, one, the guidance manual was last updated in 2012. So it's been a while since anybody took a hard look at it and how it applies. What we know about the program in the past was that there was an approach where the natural areas acquisition plan was updated relatively infrequently, like 6-7 years kind of time frame. And at that time, they would do a call for projects and reach out to all of the partner agencies and seek those sponsorship agreements, and develop this big list of projects. And then we would go out for a bond, and the county would bond against the revenue stream from conservation futures. So we'd have this big pot of money to then, you know, go forward with projects. What we're noticing more recently is just the real estate market in the county is so aggressive that it's hard to be competitive in any way. So we're trying to be a little bit more nimble, trying to address projects more as they come up. We would ask that the partner agencies like cities and nonprofit organizations do some of that same way, and then come to us with more of a fully baked project, so that they can execute more quickly on their end once that two-year agreement is in place. So that's kind of the concept behind the way that we're approaching the guidance manual currently. And then Danielle's going to talk about kind of the difference between county projects and sponsor projects, which is something that Tanya brought up just a little while ago. So I'll let her go from there.
Yeah, so Dawn, I emailed you just a few minutes ago about the handout. So you have that. So the thought is for the project matrix is that, you know, in theory, what it would be is you've got county. Oh, yeah, sorry. Hold on. You're good. So you have county projects, right? And you've got sponsored projects. And the thought is this is kind of how it would go. The county projects are typically what we're going to do for all projects now moving forward is sub areas, right? So watersheds, focusing on watersheds, and then making sure all the watersheds are equally distributed, and then rotating through all of those. Okay. And then the thought is that the county, and then it would, including, so we've also been doing farmland trusts. That's the most recent one. So it's agricultural protection. We've also talked about forestry. So those are a couple other options as well. Then there is county sponsored projects, and there are agency sponsored projects. With the county, based on the approved CIP that we dovetail into David's CIP plan with the natural areas acquisition plan, we already know where those watersheds are. So in theory, what we're doing is we're looking at that approved list, and we know which ones are next. And then we can acquire, if you will, pieces that are high quality conservation areas, as well as there's some key areas at East Fork we'd like to pick up that are part of that larger Greenway Trail as well that has been going on since the early 90s. So we will, in theory, follow whatever is approved on the CIP and the Natural Areas Acquisition Plan. That's a process that's approved by council. Then at that point, we would go through the criteria and confirm that we are doing what would be viewed as a high quality conservation property. At that point, I'm working with landowners to write a purchase and sale agreement. We're coming back to PAB and council for approval on those things. Let's talk about the sponsor agency. So on this side, on a sponsor agency, so say an agency comes to us and they have a project. Some might be ranked at a 50 to 25% match funds, right? And so some of those funds, in theory, they're able to leverage because they already have, a little more fleshed out project. So that is a little bit better on ranking, I would assume. And then, or you have your full funding. So then PAB, what we're talking about is having a subcommittee review that and then bring it back to PAB for review of the approved projects. You guys would make those calls on the approved projects. At that point, those approved projects would then go to county council. There would be a presentation. County council will have the last say on projects in general. And then once those are fleshed out and approved, they go back into our natural areas acquisition plan or our CIP plan for the funding sources, and we would create an interagency agreement. So the thought process is that we're trying to make it a little bit faster, like Kevin said, and we're hoping to work with agencies that they might have a better understanding of what we're asking for in terms of the criteria, and that they will actually have, if you will, a shovel-ready project to go after instead of these, like, you know, haven't even talked to the property owner yet scenario. So that's kind of the thought process in terms of that. The subcommittee thought is that we heard last time, actually quite a few times, that this is a special meeting to rank all these things that takes a lot of extra time. So the thought is that you guys would decide who you want on your subcommittee, and then we would come back to PAB with that subcommittee's recommendations. We county staff will review it as well for integrity in terms of, like, you know, all the environmental factors and all the various other things that need to go into validating those projects. So that kind of is the thought process on the matrix. Is there any questions on that?
Seems to make sense.
It seems like that process was pretty well fleshed out, and the exception of that version, which you were going to work on.
Yeah.
Just a side question from what you were saying. So there's a lot of these lands, some of them it talks about in the manual, you touched on this, are intended to conserve farms, mm-hmm. and some are intended for conservation. There's a lot of different sites that we've acquired that used to be farms, but now they're being converted to conservation. So out of curiosity, when you acquire those, how do you typically go about deciding whether you'll use it as conservation or continue it as a historical farmland?
It's a great question. I think the most recent project is we're actually buying development rights on a farm, an active farm. So that's the difference, is we're actually buying, if you will, their development rights. They will still maintain their farm. It's privately owned still. The county has extinguished those development rights. It will always stay in farming, perpetuity-wise. Mm-hmm. And so, whereas what you're talking about is county owned what was farmland at one time.
Yeah, there's
it's private. It's a different ownership scenario.
Yeah.
We're working more with private farmers directly.
So in those settings where the county decides to continue it as a farm, you typically coordinate with the farmers that are farming it and then create an initial agreement there. But if that is not in place, then you typically intend it as conservation. Do you see that's accurate?
If I may.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think up until recently, the county acquired property based on its consistency with the goals and objectives of the Natural Areas Acquisition Plan. And there's several conservation mapping layers that go into a model that determines what are high value conservation areas. So that would be the intended purpose for all of those acquisitions up until this point were just conservation, not farming. The county's not going to farm, and we wouldn't seek farmland unless it was consistent with the conservation area or natural areas acquisition plan and high value conservation. So up until recently, that we started a program to essentially purchase development rights from landowners that are actively farming. And in that situation, we don't own the property. We only own the development rights. So it's kind of like placing a conservation easement over the property and saying, this property forever will be farmland and will be used as farmland. And if you try to sell it, the person who's buying it is going to have that same restriction on the property to continue to use it as farmland. The idea of keeping farmland in farmland. So those are kind of the two distinctions between those types of projects. We've only done one project like that, farmland conservation. We've had a couple of proposals for forest land conservation that are similar. The difference being that they would have a conservation easement to keep them in working forest.
I have a question about that. Can they seek those sorts of conservation easements through other entities other than the county?
Yes.
They can do it through the land trust?
Yeah.
Yes. And so the conservation district.
Yeah.
The Columbia Land Trust is one organization that does this. Washington Farmland Trust is another organization that does this.
Yeah.
Other conservation futures programs in the state have programs that do this kind of thing and purchase development rights. One program that we've spoken with solely does farmland conservation as their type of project that they pursue in their county. Skagit, is that right?
Yeah. Is it possible that we would partner with those, one of those entities, so they bring some funding to the table, we bring funding to the table? Or?
Yeah, we are doing that. Yeah. So through the RCWs that define conservation futures programs in the state of Washington, eligible entities for receiving funding other than cities include nonprofit organizations like the Land Trust, Washington Farmland Trust, Columbia Land Trust. Nature Conservancy would be an eligible entity. So,
so with that, I guess we all work on more of your questions. And I'm still working on the draft as we speak, trying to fix. There's some formatting errors in the page numbers, and that's what's happened. And then next month, we want to come back. If you can get me your information more sooner than not, and then I try to incorporate that in. If you guys think of anything more, Don or you guys, just please email me, and then I will prepare a final draft for review next Parks Advisory Board.
And also, we're planning a work session with Clark County Council in September. So that'll be the end of September. We'll get you the date. I want to say it's the 27th.
You said it. Well, we haven't confirmed it, I don't think.
I think it's officially confirmed now. So you'll get invited to that. You know, you can listen in. But I think what we're hoping for is that there'll be a recommendation made by Parks Advisory Board on the guidance manual to council moving forward. We can give your feedback to council as part of that work session. We kind of build that into the process. And then we would be looking for adoption of the guidance manual later in the year or possibly early next year by council so that we can start the process that Danielle was laying out with doing a call for projects, doing that outreach with the agencies and nonprofit organizations and try to build the next list of projects funding.
Thank you.
Discuss that next month. Again. Parks, bees.
Rocky's going to give it a shot remotely.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. For the record, Rocky Houston, Clark County Parks and Lands Division of Public Works. In front of you is a final revision. Yes?
Is there any way to improve how loud you are, Rocky?
You need me to be louder?
For the first time ever, yes, Rocky.
He's the TV
I'll do my best. I don't want to shout, but yeah. So is this better?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So in front of you is a report that you've seen in prior meetings. We did with the subcommittee a review of our current fee program and looked at adjacent recreation managers, schools, et cetera, in regards to how they're operating their programs where there's a fee associated with it. So we looked at our shelter fees, parking fees. We looked at special use fees, recreational fees for sports fields, and for room rentals. We only have one, which you guys are in today. I think last met with you on this in June to conduct a 30-day public comment period that ended on July 28th. Through that process, we received, I believe, 26 public comments. Most of those comments, well, they're all in the back in Appendix B of the report that you received. Most of those comments would like us not to make any changes to our fee program. We also met with the many of the sports leagues that are utilizing our facilities. Most of those are youth, but not all our youth sport leagues. Through that, they also commented that they'd like to have no change. They've seen a lot of increases in all their other expenses, and so there's a concern of an additional increase in fees. We communicated that we're experiencing those same cost increases and everything else, and looked at options along those lines. They really didn't like the combination of a fee rental going up as well as having a parking fee for a sports complex. In addition, we had one public opinion article in one of the publications locally that was opposed to having any fees increase. So at this time, based off of our prior engagement, staff's recommendation is to move this forward for council to review in a work session and then consider as a change. However, I want to make sure that based off the reviews, if there's any changes in recommendations or any discussion based off the feedback, and I open the floor to you.
Rocky. Hey, Rocky, Don here. Oh, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
This is a recommendation for, it's not, you're not setting fees here, are we?
We don't have the authority to set fees. We can only make a recommendation to council.
Gotcha. Okay.
Don?
Yeah, I'm with you. I recommend moving forward. Some of the public comments, they were valuable, and we knew that we weren't going to appease everybody with the rate change. I think, like, being a part of the committee, I think I'm a little bit biased in this regard. It was solid work with a lot of analysis, and you're just not going to make everybody happy.
Okay, thank you.
I think my one other comment, and I'm a little late in doing this, is the parking fees that go in the additional parks. I've been to a lot of sporting facilities around the country, and most of them, very few of them actually charge. For instance, a place like this, and I can see doing it for some events, I think, but anyway, I'm scratching my head a little bit, and I'm a little late on commenting on that.
Some of the parks like Lewis William Clark Park, which is basically just a swimming area, it's not a sports place.
Right. I mean, regional parks, I think. So, Portland Parks doesn't charge
or any of the parks parking. Washington Park, Milan Park, and Bennett Mansion, I think are the only three they charge for. Twelfth and Hills doesn't have any parking fees. And I guess I think you in some of these parks are going to create some problems. And I'm a little late to thinking about this. But Pacific Community Park, for instance, people going there to walk the dog, they're probably going to, I don't know what they're going to do. I think they would have a hard time. Maybe I'm wrong. Don?
No, I do agree that any change in a fee or is going to create some use pattern changes. There's going to be some education and process, you know, and part of that is our, you know, if we were tomorrow to get approval to implement those additional parks, the 13 parks additional, we wouldn't be able to implement them overnight, so we'd have to phase those in over time. That would be an approach. So even if we did get approval to start charging fees, is how do we phase those in to have the infrastructure there, et cetera. Our enforcement right now isn't heavy. It's pretty light in regards to enforcement, so we have been using the soft glove approach of educating people. I don't believe anyone's getting tickets, for example, like you might in a different jurisdiction right now. So those are some of those things to try to make sure that any change phased in. In addition, we are not under any requirements to move something forward tonight, or so we're on our own schedule. So if there is additional investigation, discussion needed, I want to make sure that we do have that engagement and that discussion to make sure whatever we do move forward is going to be successful.
Yeah, we really want a soft landing is what I would, that's how I would say it. Like, we don't want shock and awe. And then Rocky, also one of the things that I pondered when particularly to your comment, Jim, is in the future, we can explore, parking grants to those who are you know, financially challenged, can't necessarily afford it, some other means like that. And I'd also like to explore our public transport, ensuring that we've got stops within close proximity to these parks that we're charging.
If I can jump in real quick, and it's a sort of a question to Rocky and a response to you, and then a question about moving it forward. So bear with me as I try to articulate this. Rocky alluded to phasing. We could talk about phasing the parking fee at the 17 sites in this report. We could tie it to some of the parking lot major maintenance that we need to do in the capital plan and say at the time that we make these improvements, we would add the fee machines over time. So it's not an all at once. It's the spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down, perhaps. Yeah. While we explore Don's reiteration of the language in the report to find somebody to partner with on having a scholarship program or a grant program for the annual parking passes, so we can talk about doing it in a respectful and mindful way. And that can be, you could make a recommendation to move it forward with, I'm thinking you could make a recommendation to move it forward, your motion, with the addition of a phasing plan for parking. So you or you can table it.
Well, I think it's more of a recommendation to consider parking fees. I think these additional ones, as I recall. Yeah. You don't wear it set the fee, we're doing it tomorrow, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And I really don't have a problem with recommending consideration.
Yeah.
question on the annual parking pass. You get an annual parking pass, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I get an annual parking pass at Vancouver Lake, is that good at all the other parks?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's $40 to park at any park that we have a parking fee. And so,
or then that's 9 cents per day.
If you go to a park every day. Pacific Park is a perfect example. If that's where you take your dog to exercise and to do other things that dogs do in dog parks, one could make the case that that's a service that the park district is providing to a dog owner for free through the relationship with Dog Paw.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
My glove box right now, I've got a federal pass, which covers forest pass. I have an Oregon State Park. I have a Washington State Park pass. And then I'll get a Clark County park pass.
And also, if we introduce this concept of phasing them in as we, you know, and we don't necessarily need to tie it directly to the capital plan, but we can say that over time, when we have other activities at the park, we would make those fee machine improvements. That always can change if there's like a giant headwind against it. That's what happened at Oregon State Parks. There were parking fees everywhere, then there were parking fees nowhere, then there were parking fees in some areas. And so they've regularly sort of vacillated between whether they have parking fees or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that finding a happy medium may be where we end up.
And with the parking fees that we are proposing in the 13th additional, it still allows 85% of our properties to be without a fee for parking. So we are still trying to make sure that there is a balance. However, if that is the core thing in this recommendation that we have that needs to be pulled at this time, you know, that for more work, I'm fine with that and want to make sure that we're using Don as, you know, we've got a nice soft landing. We've got good support from as many sides as we can moving forward on something. And beat a dead horse, and I apologize, is we have three sort of ways to kind of manage our fiscal resources. So we charge fees for some things is one. We get a tax, a levy, or some other general funds is the other. Or the third is that we reduce our level of service or what we're offering to be within our budget. And part of this impetus for what we looked at, as you guys know, was in the MPD, we're currently expending more funds than we're bringing in. And so this is one of those first steps of looking at a way to offset some of those expenditures in lieu of a levy lift or other thing in the future. If we made no action today, we still have 6 years or more for current forecast before something's really dire. But, you know, that's why we're looking at it now.
Do we have a motion to approve this? By and large, I do support this. I was on the committee. I'm not going to not support it because of the parking fees inclusion of this.
I support it.
Okay. Do we need a motion?
Yeah.
Yep. I motion that we move it forward.
Okay.
I second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous.
Okay.
And then Rocky, for your team, I'd be really interested in putting this as an agenda item that we can talk about future efforts that could parallel this. Or come in swiftly behind it so that we can make sure that we're trying to meet in some of our DEI goals, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yes, and we'll move this forward to council for a work session and get feedback from there. And I agree with you, Don. I think there's a lot of work there to try to figure out how we can bridge any economic bridges for some of our community bridges members.
Yeah, by any chance, does anybody know what it costs to park at the Clark County Fair this year? Has anybody been yet?
No.
I mean, I'm sure it's at least $20. Was it, Tanya?
I think concerts are 15 to 20.
Yeah. $30 at the Moda Center is what I paid to see Shinedown. I thought that was steep, but.
I know it's $15 for a Thorns game.
$20 for the Trailblazers. Covered parking. I paid $50 for a concert in Seattle on Friday night for parking.
That's on top of it. Wasn't Taylor Swift, was it?
It was not.
That was two weeks ago.
If it was, I would admit it.
I saw a sign. My daughter went to Taylor Swift. I saw a sign. She had taken a bunch of photos, and right there by the stadium, I mean, there's very limited parking there anyways, but the parking was $125. That was just for the parking.
The cheapest ticket was $600.
Yeah.
Yeah. Insanity.
Cheapest ticket, $600. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have any new business?
Question.
No.
There was an article in the paper about sports tourism in Vancouver. See that in the Columbia?
Sports what?
Tourism.
Oh, no, I did not. I missed it.
And they talked about a rowing team that came, did their at Vancouver Lake.
Yeah.
So do they pay a fee to use the lake for rowing? Or the dragon boat races or those kind of
They would.
Sorry. There are special use fees for those collegiate events and other events there, though they vary based off of the number of participants. I think the highest fee we have is about $2,000 for one of those collegiate events.
Great. That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
Okay. Any other questions? Are we getting up this early?
Do you want a round table?
We can do that, yes.
I had my first question was, she had answered already about Spud Mountain.
Yeah. I got nothing.
But unfortunately, I have something.
Okay. I know it.
That's why you asked.
We're going to bring the CIP back for your final look next month.
Good.
And it's going to go to council for work session in October and an adoption in November. We're going in front of the council tomorrow to get approval to bring it to them in October. We're going to use the Parks Advisory Board meeting as our public meeting, so we may have folks come here. I work with Kaylee, who is not on the call anymore, to try to understand how the transportation folks do the TIP, the transportation improvement plan, how they do their public process. And they do a more extensive comment period every 6 years. But they consider the transportation board's meeting as their public process for their annual adoption. So we're gonna, for staff resource purposes and timing purposes, we're gonna consider that a public meeting. So you'll see a public meeting announcement probably in the next, probably before the end of the week, I'm hoping. You'll also see the draft CIP in your inbox. And if you need a paper copy, we'll work on getting you a paper copy so you can look at these 11 by 17 spreadsheets. One notable change, and I don't remember if Rocky brought this to your attention in the last Parks Advisory Board meeting, but for sort of property restriction reasons, frontage reasons, and habitat restriction reasons, we're going to be moving our Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park project to the Mount Vista property. It's an undeveloped property that we have about a quarter of a mile away from Salmon Creek Community Club, Salmon Creek Community Club property, which is a legacy lands property. So it gets really complicated really fast for us to develop an urban level of neighborhood park, a legacy lands property. The frontage, it fronts a three-lane road and it has really poor sight distances. And so we're working with the neighborhood association up there, Three Creeks.
Four
Creeks.
We'll
be Four Creeks. There's some creeks involved. And we'll also be trying to connect with Dr. Allen because she's been interested in that project all along and we don't want her to sort of get wind of it. Secondhand, third hand, fourth hand.
I like that you're being proactive about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
you're moving project to Mount Vista.
We're going to move we're not going to abandon improvements at Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park entirely. We're going to scale it back so it's more of a natural resource-based development. So trail access for Whipple Creek Hollow, we're going to explore making a connection to the Whipple Creek Hollow Regional Park from that location. There might be like a small nature play area, a few picnic tables, but there won't be a basketball court. There won't be mowed grass. There's another reason to scale back the development there. It's less of a permit and regulatory challenge, but they are building, there's a developer building six homes on one lot next to it. So it's like a little cluster subdivision. And those homes are all going to be facing our property. And so when this property was purchased years and years ago, the character of the area was different than it currently is. The traffic was different than it currently is. It's at a hard right turn on a road that sees a lot of traffic, hard left through on the other direction, obviously. But so we've just decided that we have this other piece of property. It's a more appropriate size for our neighborhood park development. It's over 3 acres, and we've been working with the council and the budget office to make an amendment to our 23 CIP so we can start doing the planning. So we'll be bringing the CIP in September. In October, I've been working on a revision to the gate agreement policy. We allow adjacent property owners to apply for a gate agreement to leave their property to come directly onto our property. I've been working with the operations folks and with our habitat folks to try and understand what the impacts of just people entering the property from multiple locations has on habitat and operations. Those user-defined trails become really challenging. And so I'm working on a policy that precludes that if they're trying to enter our property from into a habitat area or into an undeveloped part of the property. A good example is Cozy Creek. Probably 2/3 of the south boundary of Cozy Creek, Cozy Camp, is wet. And if somebody wanted to get a gate agreement to come on to the property, they'd be 2/3 of the property owners would be entering in a wetland. And so we need to sort of put some language in the policy that gives us the ability to say no articulately and fall back on something in writing.
Is it much call for that?
Lots.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Whole bunch. I have a lot of people that I'm sort of holding at arm's length.
Gotcha.
At this point. Just tell them we're working on a policy. And then the other thing that I've been working on for far too long is the monument memorial bench policy. It was memorials and donations, and I've drafted a policy that I'll bring in October with the gate policy to talk about that's more monuments and tributes and leave the donations out because the donation piece.
fees complicates things. It gets more, if you wanted to give us $5,000, it becomes more of a negotiation as opposed to if you wanted a memorial bench. So remove the donation part of that policy, updated the costs of those things, identified preferences in the draft. We would prefer this as a memorial as opposed to that as a memorial, to try and, again, be able to have a conversation with somebody and say, yeah, we don't really do that in our parks, but we could offer you this opportunity to memorialize or pay tribute to your loved one. So we'll bring those in October. That's all I have for you.
Okay, let's go home early.
Yeah, thank you.
Rocky doesn't get to decide. He has a round table. You're not here?
Thanks, everyone. Appreciate everyone's flexibility.
Thanks, Rocky.
Thanks.